Today's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by LEGO Worlds. Explore, discover, create together. Participate in a galaxy of imaginative worlds made entirely of LEGO bricks in the hit video game LEGO Worlds. From helicopters to dragons, motorbikes to bears, there are always interesting ways for players to explore the vast worlds and discover hidden treasures while creating anything you can imagine, one brick at a time. A great gift for the holidays, LEGO Worlds is available now on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC. Enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Dave Lozo of the website Vice Sports, and also I write at The Athletic. And you can also find my stuff if you go to sportsexchange.com, where I write Ranger game stories on the nights they play games.
And I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.
You're not even pause it anymore. You're rolling. You got to go. I'm Greg Wyshynski. ES. You're breezing through it.
Oh right. There's usually when they do it.
Yeah.
It's like I'm Greg Wyshynski. ESPN.
There you go.
And you're in Puck Soup. I don't know why. Last year there was a lot of reasons to be in Puck Soup. Mainly, the main one being that, along with Dave Lozo being on the podcast, there was a guy who was one of the 100 people of power and influence in the world of hockey, according to the hockey news. But
was it Damien?
No, it was me.
Oh,
but now that
like our guests,
the new issue came out, it appears as though I am no longer one of the 100 most powerful and influential people in hockey.
Your power has left you. You're old now.
I left Yahoo to go to ESPN. And then I'm off the list.
But you're not mad about it. You're laughing.
Me and you and Down Goes Brown put together a best-selling book in a span of 2 weeks that came out in the calendar year 2017. But by no means are we powerful or influential.
Is it power and influence or power or influence?
Power at 100 people of power and influence.
Okay.
Number one on the list.
Maybe it's power we have, but influence we don't.
Number one on the list is John Tavares was the most powerful and influential person, which is, come on, give me a fucking break.
I'm willing to admit he's powerful because he controls, a lot of teams' fates based on where he signs next year, but he's not really influencing anybody. He could walk down Broadway in New York and no one would notice him.
It's the kind of list you have to do this shit on because every year it should be like Bettman's number one every year until he is no longer commissioner.
All right, wait. I haven't seen the list. Let me throw some names out there, and you tell me if they're on there or not.
Oh God, I don't have this full. But go ahead,
Ken Holland.
I don't know where he is, if he's on this list or not,
because he's probably one of
the
powerful.
I'll give you some of the prominent names. Ready? So the top five are John Tavares, Gary Bettman, Jeremy Jacobs, Connor McDavid, and Donald Fear. And then Bill Daly, Austin Matthews.
Donald Fear has neither power nor influence. Have you seen the CBA? Are you kidding me?
Donald Fear. Bill Daly, Austin Matthews, Eric Carlson, Sidney Crosby, and Murray Edwards, the owner of the Calgary Flames, who has such power and influence that he can't get an arena built in a hockey
match. Seriously? Well, that's actually cool, though, because Connor McDavid is a Puck Soup podcast friend, and he's fifth. So
friend of the podcast.
Who else? Are there any other friends of the podcast on there? Because we have Patrick and Damian on, though I don't know if player safety has...
Bob McKenzie, friend of the podcast.
Yeah, Bob.
Is on the list. He is number 43.
We have so many non-hockey.
I'm sorry, 42. 43 is Elliot Friedman, who is, I guess, a friend of the podcast, but also now Merrick's new partner. I don't know if that's weird for you.
We had Elliot on the podcast?
No, we didn't. Yeah. I mean, he could be a friend of the podcast, one assumes.
He's an acquaintance of the podcast. He listens to the podcast. He emails me about it once in a while, but like he's never been on.
He's not going to have time now that he's going to have a podcast that'll blow us out of the water.
Yeah. More competition. So, like, Elliot's going to be like, sources told me that in Las Vegas, George McPhee is considering going all in this season on a playoff spot. And then Jeff's like, well, there's a couple of good guys who are playing in Sault Ste. Marie that could be.
But here's the thing. I actually reached out to somebody at the Hockey News about not being on the list.
Did you?
This year.
Wow.
I was curious because here's my theory, right? Like,
man, you really are pissed. Like, I think you're kidding.
I'm not pissed off. I was the first blogger to ever make the list.
Oh, boy.
I knew I was going to fall off at some point.
Oh, man.
But I was curious as to why. Because what would your theory be if the hockey news puts out a list and all of a sudden I'm not on it? What would be your theory on that? here, let me help. That we just shit on Ken Campbell until he's under a giant pile of shit, and you need to give him scuba gear to swim out of the shit that we pile on top of him.
What was that? Was that the reason?
No. The reason was that it's not the year of Greg Wyshynski at ESPN and on Puck Soup, but it's the year of The Athletic. So that was sort of the...
I write for The Athletic. Why am I not on the list?
The digital media, guys that got put over. So, like, Myrtle's, like, 70-something. LeBron's on the list. So it was like the Athletic kind of sucked all the air out of the room for the rest of us digital media types.
So how many Athletic people? Is Tyler Dello on there?
No, just those two.
Who's the other one? Oh, Pierre.
Pierre and Myrtle. Yeah.
What about Custance?
Custance, I don't think, made the list.
No kidding. Yeah. So it's the year of the Athletic, and they make up exactly 2% of the list.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
That's what was... Pierre McGuire made the list.
Who's number 69?
Number 69, my friends, is...
That's the only spot I want on there. I don't want any other spot.
Brent Burns.
Hey! Hey, with that beard, though, that's fun. He's already...
No longer powerful, no longer influential.
Hmm.
It was a good run.
Any weird ones? Any like non-hockey people? You know what I mean? Like actors or... Like, is Margot Robbie on the list is basically what I'm asking.
No, I mean, it's, you know...
Don
Cherry is on the list.
I don't want power or influence. I want money. I want to be on the Hockey News as 100 people that got a bunch of money in 2000.
Ben Lovejoy is on the list for donating his brain to science, one assumes.
Oh, yeah. Somebody came up to me after the live show and wanted us to talk about that. I realized we hadn't talked about that. We didn't even talk about it on the Patreon either. I think it's great that he's doing it.
I think it's great that he's doing it, too.
It's one of those cool things. Like the thing I said to the person who asked me, I was like, it's one of those things where I'm surprised more players aren't doing it because it is like a socially conscious thing to do, but it's not anything that would disrupt the locker room. Like if a player came out and was like, yeah, I'm supporting of gay people in the locker room, you know, behind closed doors, people would be like, yeah, you should be careful about that because we don't want to disrupt because of like the NFL and Tony Dungy and dicks. Like there's probably people like that behind the scenes, but CTE, nobody wants to have CTE.
No. And the interesting thing about Lovejoy, because I interviewed him about it after he made the announcement, he claims he's never had a concussion. So this isn't somebody who's been in a billion fights and gotten his bell rung and everything. He claims he's never been concussed.
Remember that year of the Winter Classic when remember the scene in the Winter Classic show when his face was all swollen and Sidney goes, "Oh, Benny."
He claims he never had a concussion.
But how did he I forget how he fucked up his face.
Mumps, I don't know.
No, he got hit with
hit with something and his face is all puffed up. Yeah.
And he wasn't concussed.
Remember when Crosby had the mumps and his face looked like someone chewed a bunch of bubble gum and stuck it on a wall. And he's like, ain't the mumps.
He's like, yeah, this isn't the mumps. Like, I'm not a doctor. But I'm going to say you might want to get that checked out.
No, the thing about Lovejoy and CTE is, you know, one of the things that he was told in deciding this is that they're working towards, if not a cure, at least some level of identification. And the more research they can do on healthy brains, the better it's going to be. And you know, the CTE thing for me has always been a little dicey because, like, I know why Gary Bettman denies it. He's facing a gigantic lawsuit. I guess he has to.
That's just his default mode is to deny things.
It's like one of the dumbest fucking things this league does is to deny the existence of CTE and the links between CTE and contact sports. Where I think the NHL is correct is when they say the science isn't there yet. And I think that...
What do you mean there? What's there?
In the sense that we don't know if everybody who plays hockey is at risk for CTE or if there are certain people who are genetically
more
predisposed
to have it,
to getting it because their brains are built a certain way. Like, that's a legitimate argument.
Yeah.
Does it supersede concussion protocols and aftercare for players who retire? Of course not. And that's the biggest thing for me. Like I don't think we've really talked a lot about the concussion lawsuit. And now there's this other lawsuit that Mike Peluso bought against the Devils in the NHL, which is going to be really interesting because I think Bettman, Daly, and Lamoriello are going to all have to testify at some point. But the real tragedy to me, error.
Well, all I say that your concussions were the results of things you could have prevented yourself.
Error. Did anyone see him not bump his head on the way to the locker room? Could have been that.
Or maybe he just has headaches all the time and doesn't know.
It's just the PA banging the heads against the wall in every negotiation with me.
And then Bill Daly goes, what Gary said. No, Donald Trump, Sean Leahy, Bill Daly, fuck off. But like, I, the biggest tragedy of the concussion lawsuit is that it does need to happen in the sense, not in the sense that these guys deserve any financial compensation because the league lied to them when they were playing, which I think is horseshit. Like, I think it was an unspoken agreement that, you know, you're at risk of concussion and you're voluntarily fighting and getting punched in the fucking head. Like, come on.
Yeah, but again, if you don't, if you're just living your life as someone who thinks you're just getting your bell rung and you're fine, and doctors know you're not and they don't tell you.
But there are also guys in that lawsuit that played agreement. 5 games in the league who are suing the NHL.
I'm not saying that there probably can't be people on the lawsuit that aren't just looking to get paid, but I mean, like, certain guys were probably lying.
They're all looking to get paid, and that's the greater point, is that as much as I think this lawsuit is kind of bullshit, especially in comparison to what the NFL actually did to deceive these guys, I think the real issue here is creating awareness for the care for players after their playing days are done. There is not nearly enough.
Yeah.
Fiscally.
That's every sport.
Yeah. And especially in the NHL. Like, well, the NFL more than anything, because the shelf life of these guys is so short in football.
Yeah, there's no guarantee contracts.
But, like, there needs to be way, way more financial compensation for players after the NHL and aftercare. I mean, there's something.
Look at you starting your new power and influence campaign. Let's make this the 2018 cause.
I'm gunning for you.
Aftercare.
Yeah. Ben Lutt. No.
Don Fear. How is Don Fear on that list, man?
He's like fifth.
Jesus, God. What's he done since the CBA thing?
I had a good run. I was on that list from like 2009 until this year.
You're like Sid, where like Sid was always top five in scoring, and now this year he's like 27.
No, I'm not like Sid because the first year I was number 100. And then the next year, I was number 99. I was number 100. The first year I ever made the list, they treated me like when Entertainment Weekly puts out their top 100 like entertainers, and like number 100 is like Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, God. Or now you're like Malkin. You're like Mr. 101.
That's right. I'm not on the list.
Right.
Yeah, Myrtle's basically Taves.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
Dude, no.
That is the meanest thing ever.
It's just jokes. Taves is Taves. I'm sure he's on the list somewhere.
He's clearly an Anisimov. He's tall. He's angular. You know, he's...
He is.
He's a good, solid...
If this is the year of the Athletic, like everybody, all of our friends right there now, basically.
I just did an interview with Craig Custance of the Athletic before we started the podcast about our podcast. This is the start of influencing.
Are you allowed to predict what you think is going to happen to the Athletic in the next calendar year, or can you not predict that because you're an employee?
No, I can do whatever I want.
Okay. What do you think? When we talk about the Athletic a year from now, what do you think it's going to look like?
I don't know if it's really going to be that much different. Like, the thing that I always wonder about with the Athletic is. I think we've already talked about this on the podcast where it's like, you know, you're always talking about how many subscribers you have, the way like a guy's always bragging about how big his dick is.
Right, like we have over 1,200 subscribers on Patreon, right? Yeah.
I just wonder well, that's actually true.
Like, are you talking about them inflating the numbers?
Not necessarily inflating the numbers, but I don't know. Like, I don't know what the number means. And if you're always bragging about how many people you have, it's like an NHL in attendance. They're always bragging about the attendance. And I just wonder if that matters to people who, I don't know. I want it to work. I want it to work so badly. I just don't know for sure if it's going to.
I think a year from now it's going to be even bigger than it is, because I think that the funding of the site and the funding of the company is not a 1 year proposition.
And I want to know what the founders and those tech bros, what their interview with the Times did. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I wonder about that.
I don't know. I think probably minimal damage.
Yeah.
I think what we're going to see, though, in a year from now is, like, they're going to make forays into video. I wouldn't surprise me to see them grow their brand that way.
Isn't
of course.
The Athletic's very anti-video, isn't it? It's very much...
I think it's a necessity. I think it's a necessity. They're already doing podcasting.
Oh.
You couldn't see them doing a Ringer-like show where there's four people on a set talking about sports with the amount of money they're paying the talent.
Oh, you're talking about like a
I'm not talking
a produced
about
show,
jerk
not
off
like,
bullshit video like I used to do at Yahoo.
Yeah.
I mean like real video.
No, I mean like no, because like no, I just meant because when you see like you say video, I think of when I go to ESPN.com and I click on like the Chargers schedule page and then like two videos start autoplaying within like 40 seconds of each other and I'm like, fuck, where is it? Where is it?
You know what the worst
mute?
The absolute worst for
that
is Sports Illustrated. When I go read Richard Deitch's media column to see how many times he uses the phrase front facing talent. There's a video that plays, and then I try to click it off, and then it scurries over to the bottom corner like a scared rodent, and it's still playing. And not only is it playing, it's a fucking video about the article I'm reading. Like, I'm reading this thing, and it's like Richard Deitch's media thoughts, and then the fucking rodent video at the bottom of the screen is like,
on this week's edition of Richard Deitch's Media Thoughts. I'm like, what the fuck?
I know how to read. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I don't need a trailer for the thing I'm about to, I'm actually reading now.
Yeah, I could see The Athletic doing video if it's like that. If it's like, you know, the Craig Custin show starring Craig Custin's Between Two Ferns.
Hi, everybody.
I can see
Craig Custin's. it's my show.
Like, they have all these people that are trained at it, like Pierre. They have people that know how to do video. But I don't think they're going to do that Richard Deitch version of
video. I think the issue is that the talent is spread out. So you can't do like a ringer thing necessarily. You'd have to do like heads in a box, like an around the horn thing probably. But I think to get back to the point, I think they're going to be bigger than they are now. I think they're going to be in more cities. I think there's going to be video. I think the investment in this thing is at least for another year. And then maybe we start to parse the roles. And it's never going to go away. Like it's such a huge success in Toronto. And that's to Myrtle's credit, by the way. I didn't mean to slag on him before. He's a friend of mine. And he's
look
like,
who admits really, who's more powerful and influential
he's
after
much
all.
Much more powerful than I am right now. Like, that site's established. Like, that site's never going away. Like, even if other ones do. It's kind of like when chain restaurants have to kind of retreat from their national status, you know, where like all of a sudden you're like driving through a city and you're like, a fucking Houlihan's. I haven't seen a Houlihan's in years. But like that one does crazy bank. Like that's going to be the Athletic Toronto, a Houlihan's.
I just wonder if, I don't know, like I always wonder if they spread out too far too fast. But I don't know. That's just like from the outside, everything seems to be going really well.
The only thing that
they like me and they give me money. They're clearly smart.
I like that they like you. I like that anyone who gives you money is a good person. Thank you, Patreon subscribers.
That's the rule. And thank you, government, for my tax break that is coming up.
Oh, are you a single person making $1 million and
as
renting?
A single person with a $1.5 million revenue per year stream.
That fucking killed me. For those who didn't see it, USA Today created a graphic to try to show the tax savings of the new tax plan that passed. And one of the examples they set was a single person renting and making $1 million a year will get like $1,800 back in their taxes.
Just don't understand what's happening.
It's like being like, Greg Wyshynski finds a quarter in his couch is pretty much that tax refund for that dude.
$1 million. Like I would love to have been in that graphic meeting where they were like, so what's the single renter making? Like 75, 60K? $1 million exactly a year. Absolutely. That's relatable for me. Thanks, USA Today.
Yeah. And where's that rental? A fucking Aspen? We're not counting the one he owns somewhere?
Right. It's like revenue, $1 million. Rent, $1,800 a month. Charity, $40K.
No, I think...
I'm bullish. I'm bullish because, you know what? It's weird because it's hard for me. Like, let's say you at ESPN... tweet out your Vegas story, right? Yeah. Your Vegas flu story.
Thank you.
I assumed
that was a compliment.
But like I see it. It was good. I read it. It was great. I see it and I can see it retweeted throughout the day by other people I follow. And you see how many like retweets and likes and you know, you're a verified person. So you can see all the clicks and engagements on your link. Like for The Athletic, it's a subscriber site. Mm-hmm. So like I can't, like if I tweet out a thing for Vice, I pretty much know how well it's going to do and how well it's doing. With The Athletic, it's different. But like people are like, oh yeah, people, you know, they're clicking the happy emoji at the bottom. So it's doing really well. And it seems like it's growing. So yeah.
That's been my two concerns about The Athletic are, well, three. I mean, obviously subscription sites and growth and that kind of thing. That's the business side of it. But like. They do great work, and I really enjoy reading it. Like I love reading Tyler Dello stuff. I love reading Dom stuff. Russo stuff remains great. I mean, you know, in coverage of the Wild, Minnesota sports, everything like that.
Former pro hockey player Justin Bourne, who never
Bourne's scored, shit is
never scored an NHL goal.
Never scored an NHL goal. Yeah, I can't score like Connor McDavid. but he like I enjoy reading all that stuff. I don't see a lot of discussion of it outside of the Athletic bubble. That concerns me.
That's the thing that I don't know how to judge it because people come to the thing I do every week and they comment on it and tell me that they don't care about my fantasy team and it's being engaged with, so I know people are reading it. I just don't know how many.
That's the thing. I think within the sphere people really enjoy it and they're engaged and they comment on it and they feel like they're part of a community. I think they did a meetup podcast live thing in Toronto that was like standing room only in the room that we had. Like, it's clear that people that read The Athletic are into The Athletic and are happy to be part of that community. But to grow it, you have to make it vital and you have to make it seem like someone has FOMO. And maybe they have FOMO because their friends are talking about it, and maybe they have FOMO because they know essentially like the coverage that Jeremy Rutherford or Mike Russo or anybody on the Toronto site, the coverage they create is going to be better than what you get for free other places or for, you know, minimal money. But I don't know how many stories that they've done have jumped over the paywall and entered the zeitgeist and are getting discussed on sports talk radio.
Well, the Ken Wilson Calgary thing where he torched Eric Francis for sure.
For sure.
I the thing I was wrong about, this is why I don't know the answers to these questions, but like when the Athletic got Ken Rosenthal, mm-hmm. I thought, well, I don't know the point of that because like Ken Rosenthal breaks news. And if he breaks the news within like 5 minutes, it's
everybody
already been aggregated.
It.
Everyone knows it already. But like when I see Ken Rosenthal tweet out like his columns and stuff, like it gets picked up a lot. People go to it. So I think having insiders like that, like Pierre's the same thing, is really, really good for it too. So
we wanted to succeed because our friends are there and the contraction of hockey coverage in the U.S.
is
a disturbing trend. And the more places that you can get paid to do this job, it's only going to be a good thing. And the number of places that are paying for really good work, it's only a good thing. Like we've seen places kind of go in different directions and maybe not put out as much content as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm happy that they pay Ryan Lambert, but maybe they don't put out as much content as they used to. So the places that do put out good content on a daily basis need to be lauded and supported.
Yeah, so go there and it's there's always deals you can get in expense. I like how suddenly we were doing like a commercial for The Athletic.
I know, right?
Check out theathletic.com and sign up today, and there's a 40% off thing.
I was talking to somebody at The Athletic, by the way, about that very thing, and they were like, yeah, it's kind of like when you're a Florida Panthers season ticket holder, and you paid full price for your ticket, and you look over at the other guy next to you, and they're like, hey, how much you pay for that ticket? He's like, oh, I have a valid Florida driver's license. They let me in for free. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Actually, I had dinner with Aaron Ekblad before the game. You didn't get to do that?
It does get a little dicey, and I feel like a lot of the people that got in early and paid full price are probably a little bit agitated at how many discounts they've done. But it's the holidays. Like, everything costs less at the holidays. It's like, you can't be angry because you bought your fucking car in May, and then on Labor Day, it's like $5,000 less. What, you didn't know that was coming? You didn't know that mattresses get cheaper on President's Day weekend? You didn't know that? You didn't see the commercial with Abe Lincoln jumping on a box spring? You never saw that?
The one thing The Athletic does that I tried to get them to change, but they didn't, is they will send out like an important story that will be unlocked, and they use the unlock emoji.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at your phone, there's not a lot of difference between the unlock and lock emoji. And I was just like, maybe you want to just say it's unlocked, because if you look at it real quickly, it looks like maybe it's locked and you can't get it. But
they should just make it the eggplant emoji and be like, this story is so good, it's going to get you hard.
Eggplant and like the squirty water thing, and it's just like... This story's positively orgasmic in your brain.
All right. Speaking of orgasms, I was in Vegas for their win over Tampa and their win over Florida, and I wrote that Vegas Blues story. And thank you for everybody who read it. I'm a believer, man. This is a good hockey team. I'm buying it. I know that it's home ice, and I know that the whole fucking crux of my story is that they're better on home ice because everybody's hungover, and there's something to that too. But two good lines. Like nine good defensemen they can pick from and choose whatever.
Oh, now there's nine good defensemen.
Well, I mean, there's
like
nine defensemen.
They got to.
And I wouldn't say John Merrill's good,
they
but
got
there's
to
like
you.
Other guys that you could pick from.
Nate Schmidt.
And Nate Schmidt's good. He's good. They're all good. And like,
you won a lot of money when you were there, didn't you?
All right. So
I knew it.
I discovered something pretty important about myself when I was in Vegas, courtesy of Ruby, because I put a bunch of money on football games. One of them was the Eagles Giants game, and I guess I deservingly took the L on that one because I got it half right. I'm like, Nick Foles is going to be great in this game.
Oh, you took the money line on the Giants, huh?
No, I took the Eagles.
You took the Eagles.
Yeah, and I'm like, Nick Foles is going to be great in this game. Little did I know, the defense was going to suck.
Eli's going to throw for 450.
Yeah, like the fucking Giants were like 17-0 or something in the beginning. Anyways, so I lost a bunch of money on football, but I won all three of my bets on hockey.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know you were in Vegas when you're asking. This guy texts me on like Friday, and he goes, what do you like for the over-under in the outdoor game? And first of all, I thought he was talking about the Sabres-Rangers game. And I'm like, why does he want to know this 2 weeks in advance?
Yeah, because hockey writer Joe over here doesn't know there's a fucking outdoor game in Ottawa night.
I was literally in the grocery store, like, and I'm looking at my phone, and I'm like, well, I mean, Zibanejad will be back by then. What's the weather going to be? I'm like, wait, oh, that game in Ottawa where it's 2 degrees under. And I didn't think. And then, a day later, I saw you were in Vegas, and I'm like, "Wait, you're putting you're at the window. You could have been like, you want $20 on this? I would have been like, yeah.
I hate making bets for people. The last person I made a bet for was my dad, And I made a bet for him, and then he's it was about the Jets game that weekend, so I had to take the ticket home with me, and then he won.
Oh my god, you had to take the ticket home with you? Oh
yeah,
no.
And then I had to put the ticket on my fridge.
Oh,
and I had
my
to
god,
wait until I saw him again, and then he took the ticket, and then he mailed it to New York, New York, and then they sent him back the money in an envelope.
Oh, it was because you left before the game was played.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I mean,
it's a hassle.
You would have just came home with like $40 for me. You'd been like, here, good job on the Ottawa Montreal under.
You know, maybe I'm not one of the good people then that likes to pay you. Maybe that's the thing.
You'd be like, oh, actually, I forgot to put the bet in.
One on the under on the outdoor game, because I was going to bet that anyway because Carey Price in
sure
an outdoor
you were.
Game.
Sure you were. Yeah.
One on the Devils against the Ducks, money line bet.
They came back in that game.
Huh? Yeah, they did?
Down 2-0.
Yeah, you never see me more happy. I was the happiest I was since 95 when the Devils won that game. and then one, I bet the Knights against the Lightning that night. And they won that game too.
Oh boy, what a bullshit.
I made some bank. So I'm never going to bet on football again. I'm just going to bet on hockey, which disqualifies me from playing in the NHL, but that's fine.
I got to go back and read your story because everyone after that game was like, boy, they fucking lost that game on a bullshit makeup call. And you were probably just like, great call by referee Joey Johnson to get James. By the way, James Neal so knew the situation, so knew they can get a makeup call. I was like, oh, I'm being held.
Real quick, did you see the Derek Englund penalty in that game?
Yeah, that shouldn't have been a penalty either.
See, I don't know. Like,
he
I don't
was just
think
dropped, should, because also Andre Palat was doing the same thing. Okay. Like, the stick never really interfered with Palat.
For those who didn't see it, Derek Englund broke his stick. Instead of just dropping it to the ice, he kind of dropped it forward.
He like discarded it.
He just
kind of like just
as players
it.
Do, yeah. And then he discarded it in the path
of Andre Palat,
but not at Andre Palat.
And the remaining part of the stick never really hits Palat. Palat is immediately complaining about it instead of playing they could have played 5-on-4 with the guy who had no or 5-on-5 with the guy who had no stick.
Yeah.
Instead he was like, ugh.
But the weird ass part about it is like it's pretty explicit in the rule that if you throw your stick at a puck carrier, it's a penalty shot. And they didn't get that.
Oh. Wait, is that true?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, if you throw your stick, equipment.
I thought it was like if it was a scoring chance. Yeah,
at a puck carrier. It's not on a scoring chance.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but they didn't get. Listen, newsflash: NHL referees make up shit as they go along. But like the makeup call was obviously going to come at some point.
It
was the worst call.
So bad.
If I was writing the game story on that, I would have said that. And I went to Stamkos after the game, and he was great, man. Like he was. Rare do you hear an athlete in a situation like that? He actually said. The referees ruined the game.
Oh, you like, signed for 8 years and $80 million.
No,
whatever
no,
you want.
He was talking about it like a fan. Like he was like, that game should have gone to overtime, and they ruined the game. Mm. And I'm like, you're right. Like that game was. I understand the Nashville Winnipeg game that night was also really super fun because there was like a ton of scoring. Yeah. That Tampa Vegas game, the atmosphere, the back and forthness. Vegas fucking comes at you with four lines. They roll them all. They're all. They get. I've not seen a team this year that gets more clean looks than Vegas does because they do so much good passing in the offensive zone at home. They're fucking good. I'm telling you.
Listen to you.
I'm a believer.
Boy.
I should have banged that whole thing of them being a wild card team. I backed off it because you made me back off it. You feel like I was going to be real dumb looking.
You'll thank me in like 45 games.
Why? They're not going anywhere. They play half their games on home ice and nobody can win there.
See, this is what happens though in our business. Mm-hmm. Like, I write a story about a trend. That's the end of the trend. Everything turns after that. You wrote the Vegas flu trend, and now they're going to lose five straight at home. People are going to at you on Twitter and be like, oh, where's the Vegas flu now? ESPN.
Ruby knows me so well because when I got back and told her I won in that game, she goes, did you bet that game because you were writing the story and like you needed him to win for the story? I'm like, I figured the day my Vegas flu story was going to run the day after the Lightning game. If they lose that game, I might as well just feel like all the pain. Like, I'll just lose the game, lose the bet, run a story that's no longer valid.
Were they favored in that game? They were dogs, probably.
They were dogs. Yeah.
What was it, like plus what? Yeah, plus 120?
Yeah, I forget what it was. I pulled a good healthy number off of it. Bang that
you,
number.
Man. Good for you, man.
Thank you.
Glad you had
But you're not a believer in the Knights, even though they're beating the Pacific, basically.
Not yet.
Why not? Why not? What is holding you back from embracing this team?
What has changed between now and the roster at the beginning of the season? It's still the same guys, right?
Yeah, which is apparently a better team than anyone thought they were.
Or are they just having a really hot start at home that eventually will turn?
A fucking 2 month hot, 3 month hot start?
Calgary and Vancouver had 6 month hot starts the year they both made the playoffs. They weren't good teams. They just happened to be in the West. That could happen for Vegas, who I think is still better than those Calgary and Vancouver teams. But
at this point, they'd have to really fall apart to not make the playoffs.
What are they, 9 points clear of like the 9 seed?
Something like that.
I still think they have it in the fall apart.
I don't want them to. I mean, I don't care if they do. Are you rooting for them or no?
No, I don't care.
I'm not rooting for anybody.
But is that you just being a cynic, or do you actually not really, like, care?
I don't care. All right. I care if Vegas wins. I care in that it's possible I could go back there in April.
Well, yeah, that's why everybody was rooting for Nashville to make the playoffs. And shit.
Right. That's all I care about.
Who's the team? Who's the team you're rooting for to make the playoffs? That is kind of on shaky ground. Like, for me, obviously it's Vegas for that very reason you stated, but also because I'm kind of fond of the team. Devils. The Devils? Do you want to make the playoffs?
Yeah? No, I'm asking you if the Devils is the team that you're.
No, Vegas is my team. As a Devils fan, this whole season's gravy.
Boy, the ship you have jumped so quickly.
Dude,
2 months.
Of the two teams, I would say Vegas has a better shot at making the playoffs than the Devils do, because the Devils are the fucking group of death.
Well, yeah, Vegas isn't the worst conference. Yeah. They're in the East Division.
A Vancouver team that almost lost their entire line in the span of 2 weeks. an Arizona team that's dog shit. Like, you know, on and on and on. The Devils have to maintain this playing in a division where everybody's within, like, 2 points of making the playoffs.
I don't really care who makes the playoffs. I don't have any sort of... I would have liked Carolina, but... Fuck, they're just a mess.
Well, speaking of palpable apathy, our guest today is David Ehrlich of IndieWire. He's got some stories to tell, man. We talk about the Rangers. We talk about the Islanders with him. We'll talk about the Islanders after the break as well. And also, breaking news. We rarely get a guest in here that can be a part of a major news story. Mm-hmm. But his feud with director David Ayer, the writer-director of Suicide Squad, who wrote David Ehrlich a snide Twitter comment.
Depending on how you interpret it.
From a certain point of view, as yes. Obi-Wan Kenobi would say.
Yes. From my point of view, David Ayer's evil. From my point of view, David Ehrlich's evil.
Because David Ehrlich gave an F to the new movie Bright on Netflix. An F. Said it was worse than the Emoji Movie.
More like dull.
Oh, Jesus. More like Blight.
That would be my movie reviews all the time.
Oh, so
the Shape of Water, more like the crap of water.
So you'd be who is that guy on?
The guy with the mustache.
The guy with the mustache. What was his
name? Gene Shalit.
Gene Shalit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's my level of. We should do that for hockey games. MVP, more like take a pee.
Bright is a blight on the movie calendar. Will Smith will not be happy with it. Orcs, more like sporks. In the sense that you could only find them in certain places and you never want to use them for anything.
I'm Gene Shalit, ESPN.
Hey, here's David Ehrlich. David Ehrlich is a critic for IndieWire?
That's right.
Where else?
Just IndieWire, man. It's one of those gigs where I'm lucky I don't have to work anywhere else.
David Ehrlich is a critic who's been on this show now twice. You're in the...
Our first two-time guest.
Two-timer club.
I'm like Messier coming back to the Rangers after a stint at the Canucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're completely washed up. You've got nothing left to offer.
Exhausted, just done. Just keep... I'm going to say we're making the playoffs or not.
Or maybe you're like Kobe and will retire two of your numbers because you've come back and excelled a second time.
Don't compare David to Kobe. That's...
I mean, that's a loaded
This is a busy time of year for you, so we thank you for joining us, because it's awards time.
Yes.
And you put together your best of the year video that you always put together, and people are always impressed with it.
It's the one time of year where I can reasonably rely on people on the internet being nice to me. So that's really the whole function of
that. How long does that thing take for you to do? From like the time you, like in terms of deciding the list, compiling the music,
Because for those who don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say for all of your listeners.
For those who don't know, it's like when you turn on the Oscars and then they have those things where it's like, the inspiration and magic of cinema, and all of the words seem to fit together, and the people look like they're talking. It's like really, really well done, very professionally done.
It isn't. I mean, maybe unarguable. Professional, definitely not. It takes a long time. I'm a man who doesn't have children, and I appreciate that fact.
Is it more or less than a month?
It's not consistent work, but it's like between the hours of midnight and 2 a.m. for about 4 months.
No shit, for 4 months.
Yeah,
so like, do you like bump movies off at the last second where you're like, shit, my 25 is now something else?
The list, the video is more important than my stupid opinions about like arbitrarily ranking one movie over another. So like once I find something that works, I'll tend to stick to it. But I do have to wait until I've seen everything and make sure that it fits in.
Since you do most of the editing between like, you know, midnight and 2 a.m., Do you ever flip on Showtime and accidentally almost edit a scene from Burnt into it?
From Gigolos, yes. From Burnt, no.
Burnt. Well, now I get why Baby Driver was 23, because you were sleep deprived.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And just lost your mind.
We should mention to the audience that...
apparently that's a sensitive topic.
Well, Lozo hates Baby Driver, like, with every fiber of his being, and really, like, mm-hmm. I believe... liked your end of year list, save for the fact that you actually acknowledged Baby Driver as being one of the best movies.
Well, I've only seen like four of the movies on his list, so I trust him that the movie with the cartoon hippo and I believe a Japanese girl in a hospital or something. I don't know.
It's on Netflix. It's
I don't know.
Ocha. It's great.
No idea what's going on in that movie, but I'm sure it's artistic and well done. But Baby Driver.
I thought you were talking about Sing for a second.
Somehow that missed the cut last year.
Yeah, it's just so weird to me how much people love Baby Driver, especially you. You hate everything.
I do.
You're like me. Yes, you hate stuff. And yet that seems like a movie you would hate because it's really just a bad script and bad story and bad plot and bad twist.
We're living in an upside down time. I love a Star Wars movie. The Rangers are 7 games above 500.
Did Big Baby Driver get to you, David?
Yes, they did. I am paid off by Disney and Baby Driver. Right.
Bob Iger's email to me and you. Make sure you praise The Last Jedi. P.S. Dave. Get on that Baby Driver.
Disney's future is really hanging on a thread there with what I say on this hockey podcast.
You mentioned the Rangers, but I want to get to another thing and find out. We talked about hate just now. As a Ranger fan, do you hate the Islanders or do you feel like it's a Batman-Joker relationship where life's more exciting when the Islanders are relevant?
You know, just to the synergy of this, to bring it all together, to quote a line from the end of Star Wars that I worry now could be seen as a spoiler, but I don't think it is. You know, what does Rose say about... saving the things we love and not destroying the things we hate.
Don't destroy the things we hate. It's about saving the things we love.
Yeah, I don't really give a fuck about the Islanders. I care about the Rangers. I care about the Islanders intensely when we're playing them and if we're fighting for a playoff spot. But I what happens to them when I'm not watching, who cares?
So if they get an arena on Long Island or they get an arena in Kansas City, you don't care?
I mean, I would care if they moved cities. I mean, like, they are a New York institution. We need them here for balance of the force. but I did like the fact, in theory at least, that they were within walking distance from my apartment when they're in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But I never actually went to a game because I hear it's a terrible place to watch hockey.
It is.
It's incredibly expensive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, listen, I wish the Brooklyn thing would have worked too. It was much more convenient than going out to Nassau Coliseum or Belmont Park or any of that stuff. But it was a terrible place to watch hockey.
Yeah.
All the fans hated going there because it was different. The scoreboard wasn't centered above the ice, and there were seats in which you couldn't see one third of what was happening because an entire zone was blocked by an overhang.
It was weird that there was another hockey team's building between my apartment and Madison Square Garden. That was sort of unfortunate, so I'll take it.
But I'm with you. Like, as a Devils fan, like I care about the Rangers. I care about the Flyers to a certain extent. I kind of like the Flyers now. They have a sort of a likable team, I think. So I don't hate them as much as I might have a decade ago. The Islanders have always just kind of, honestly, and I know Islanders fans are pissed off at me anyway because of all the John Tavares stuff I wrote. Like, they're kind of a nuisance. Like, they're there, and one time they kept us out of the playoffs,
future
and it sucked.
Ranger John Tavares?
Oh! Now, let's talk about that for a second, because, like, here's the thing. They have this big press conference, Cuomo's there, they announced the building in Belmont, everybody's going crazy and happy, and they're all asking, hey, John, here it is. The arena's here.
He's like, I'm never going to play.
Here we go. And Tavares is like, yeah, this is a really important thing for the franchise, and I got to tell you, it's pretty great for the future of the franchise.
But what's he going to say?
He didn't say he's signing.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. He was never going to say that.
Didn't they get Billy Joel? Like, that felt like a betrayal. Like, that guy's number is hung up at the fucking Garden.
Right. It's like having Jay-Z at a Porzingis press conference or something. It just can't do it.
That was weird. I mean, I have got no, ownership over Billy Joel.
I agree, because honestly, that's Christy Brinkley's team. The Islanders are Christy Brinkley's team. They're not Billy Joel's team.
It's messed up.
Yeah. But Tavares never explicitly said, this is exactly what I've been looking for. Where's my contract? I can't, January can't get here fast enough.
This is why Islander fans don't like you.
Why?
Because you were expecting John Tavares to be like, I'm announcing this new arena and also a 8-year, $80 million contract. That's never going to happen.
It's like, hey, is this exactly what you were looking for? And then his response is basically this Dave Lozian, the Larry David-ish, and that's it. That's basically what
sure.
It's equivalent of,
he's in a negotiation, you know? You need
to do what?
To get as much money as he can out
to
of
To get
Islanders.
All the money they're going to give him anyway?
Mm-hmm. I would love for him to resign with the Islanders and just guarantee that they continue to be a mediocre team for the next 8 years. That would be fantastic.
I wish he'd go, oh my God, can you imagine from a hockey perspective if he went to the Rangers?
It would be such a late 90s Rangers move. Like that's just like
I like
it.
I like it. More mid-2000s Scott Gomez move.
Yeah, even so. Yeah, it's not who we need.
We don't have enough heels in the NHL right now is the problem. And then, like, if John Tavares ended up being the biggest asshole on the planet, and he's just like, your anger feeds me, and he puts on the Rangers jersey, like, they're the greatest thing ever.
He doesn't have that bone in his body. That's the problem with hockey is, like, if, in basketball, LeBron James is like, I'm going to go play wherever. Kevin Durant's like, I'm going to go play wherever. John Tavares, I just want to stay here and, you know, help the team win a championship.
We talked about that vis-a-vis Eric Carlson on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, where it's like, everybody's like, oh my God, what's he going to do? He's totally not going to stay there because his owner is a penny-pinching megalomaniac, and I'm like, yeah, but he said he likes Ottawa, and you know, none of these guys want to move their stuff.
Yeah.
So he's probably going to stay there.
Right? Moving sucks.
Move my stuff.
Yeah, moving sucks.
Every time you hear about someone haggling for like a couple more million on these like $60 million deals to move, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there's a little thought bubble goes above their head of him and his buddy moving a couch downstairs, and you're just like, nope, I'm going to stay here for 8 years. Like, thank you very much.
Right, like, imagine if the places we rode at, we had to live there, and then for any new job, we had to move like 40 blocks somewhere in New York. I would never leave. I'd be like, oh wait, is it a brownstone? Oh my God, there's no elevator in this office. I'm
totally
just gonna
different restaurants and seamless. It's just a nightmare.
Are you a believer in the Rangers as a playoff team? Because things got dicey earlier in the season, where to the point where there was some talk that Alain Vigneault might be in trouble.
Yeah, and then he heard that and was like, hey guys, I need you to start winning, and we've lost like two games in the last few months.
It's been a pretty good run.
If you cut off the first 3 weeks of the schedule, the Rangers like up there with the Lightning.
And Vegas.
Yeah.
They're almost as good as Vegas.
Rangers and Islanders are in the wild card. Capitals, Devils, and Blue Jackets are in the playoff seeds as we do the show today. And the Flyers and Penguins are 2 points back of the wild card as we do the show. Then the Hurricanes are 4 points back. So the entire division is within playoff range.
You know what's going to happen because it happens every year. The Islanders are going to tank. The Penguins are somehow going to pull off a crazy playoff run and probably win the Stanley Cup. And the Rangers will definitely make the playoffs in like the 6-7 seed.
I've definitely been thinking about that Penguin scenario because like everybody, we talked about it, I guess, you know, we're going to talk about it on the show as well. Like the notion of the Penguins being, you know, in trouble or tired or whatever. And you just know, like, it's going to be the middle of May. And we're all going to be like, can you believe people thought the Penguins didn't have their legs this season as they're, like, sweeping the Capitals again in the semifinals?
As a wild card team.
Yeah.
That's a team I enjoy seeing lose.
Who, the Capitals?
The Capitals, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's just Ovechkin and like all. I don't know. I feel like their arena it's so annoying. And there were some really scarring playoff losses for the Rangers there a few years back.
There's history.
Fedorov scoring from like the inside the blue line, game seven.
Couple game sevens you guys lost. Yeah.
And no, a couple game sevens we won. But
you accept it. I think the worms turned on the Capitals where I feel like people. The general sense I get from hockey fans is like, we don't want Ovechkin to go down in history as like the third or maybe second greatest goal scorer of all time or whatever, and then have that asterisk next to his name and have to be like, yeah, but, you know, it was his team, really. And then, you know, we don't have to want to have that conversation.
Exactly.
We don't want him to be so Marcel Dion.
You mean the Lundqvist conversation we're going to have?
Yeah, but he was never the best goalie of his generation.
Oh,
you see what he's doing there.
Yeah, I do see what he's doing. First of all, the whole Ovechkin thing, I'm not saying like I would lose sleep at night over the fact that Alex Ovechkin has like $400 million and not a Stanley Cup. Putin can buy him one. It's fine. They'll all get what they need. But Lundqvist, he's just such a competitor that I think even if I weren't a diehard Rangers fan, I would want that guy to get a championship that he deserves. If he had a team that was worthy of his talent, he would have had one by now. And they came close, but I think that guy needs one.
Who was the bigger victim of circumstance in New York sports history, Patrick Ewing or Henrik Lundqvist?
Patrick Ewing.
You think it was Patrick Ewing?
Because he had Jordan. Like, Lundqvist has just had his own stupid team.
You think he would have won were it not for the Bulls?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's not as if the Red Wings were in Lundqvist's division for the entirety of his career.
You know, I mean, Lundqvist was coming up with Sidney Crosby and Malkin and Ovechkin. I mean, that's true. That's not nothing.
Yeah. It's not the Jordan Bulls, though. Yeah. Or the Pistons before that. Yeah.
If the Rangers had one of those guys like Marian Hossa or like, you know, one of those guys that have circumvented the cap, like a super good guy for like $3 million less.
I don't understand.
Maybe that's the difference.
I don't understand. I used to play, you know, like the NHL video games all the time, and there'd always be like a Radulov or someone who was like an 85 overall and cost $400,000 because he was on like the KHL system.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Every year you hear about a team, Vegas just picked up 24 of these guys. You know? Like, why don't the Rangers have one?
It's insane. Why can't the Rangers get a guy like Oscar Lindbergh?
All right. Hey, no matter what happens, man, no one's going to feel as shitty about life as the Florida Panthers as far as like losing. Well, not losing, but shipping off people.
Oh, Dale Talon doesn't care. He thinks he did the right thing. He's just, I don't want Riley Smith. I don't want 40 goals from Jonathan Marchessault for 900K.
Two of the top five offensive players are both from the Florida Panthers on the Golden Knights, on the Sweet Golden Knights. Where were you on Hockey in Vegas? Did you think it was going to be a hit, or did you think it might be a
thought
flop?
They were going to suck.
A hit or flop? You say I put it in movie terms. A blockbuster or a flopperoo?
It's also like gambling terms.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, I think like everyone, I thought they were going to be terrible, and they might still turn out to be in the long run, or in the short long run. But it seems like a good place as any for a hockey team. I don't know. I think it's good for the league, right?
When you talk, we'll talk about disasters in the desert. Do you like to talk about it in terms of Ishtar, Bugsy,
Ishtar's underrated,
Sahara,
or Ocean's 13?
Oof.
How dare you? I mean, come on. That's not, I mean, I enjoy that movie, but it's not good.
Someone who will ride or die for Ocean's 12 as being a brilliant movie, Ocean's 13 really hurt me.
What's your thoughts on Ocean's 8? The new,
it's complicated because I think
that was a different film with
Jack Nicholson.
I would see a Nancy Meyers Ocean's 8 that just takes place in beautiful country kitchens.
I would love if Ocean's 8 were directed by Nancy Meyers. My problem with Ocean's 8 is directed by a guy named Gary Ross, Seabiscuit Gary Ross.
Pleasantville Gary Ross.
His one good movie. Mm-hmm. I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. And those movies are all style. You need a Steven Soderbergh or a Nancy Meyers, who at least is going to have that going for her. So I'm skeptical, but the trailer's good.
Blanchett. Anne Hathaway playing Andy Garcia.
That's the part I'm not sold on. Like, I don't trust Anne Hathaway to be a good big bad in a movie. Like, I don't trust her to be, you know, Lady Terry Benedict or whatever she's supposed to be.
She's loathsome at the end of the day. Like, I think a lot of women look at Anne Hathaway and don't see women look at Sandra Bullock and they're like, I could be Sandra Bullock. Like, that's someone who falls down and makes goofy faces. And they look at Anne Hathaway and they think that she's sort of like movie robot.
No.
Anne Hathaway should be playing Anne Hathaway in the movie and they should just be robbing Anne Hathaway.
But not in the sense that Julia Roberts played Julia Roberts.
No.
Right,
I mean, although I love that and I do hope that they do something like that. But I think that Sandra Bullock is playing Danny Ocean's sister or something, which is just like, oi. And
wait, is she Danielle Ocean in the movie? And they call her Danny Ocean.
But doing 8 instead of 9 or 10 means that they just have like a trilogy built in. And
Cate Blanchett plays a rusty proxy named Varnish. You know, just on and on and on. It's just going to be.
What are they robbing though? Because I watched that on my phone.
The Met Gala. Yeah. The Met Ball. Yeah.
Oh, so it's kind of like Thomas Crown. They're stealing some
stealing
jewels.
Jewelry off of her neck.
Yeah, because girls can't break open vaults. They have to steal jewelry.
Right. Dudes rob casinos and racetracks. And ladies rob jewelry stores or whatever. Yeah, that's just how it's supposed to go.
What are we robbing, girls? Oh, it's a really, really expensive face mask from Sephora.
Although I did like the one line that Mindy Kaling has in the trailer about like looking at the Met Ball and being like, can we just go to this? Like, right. Do we have to rob it?
You know who should be the person they're robbing? Lena Dunham.
Wow.
Oh my God, that's perfect.
Like they just break into her apartment and steal Lambie and rescue Lambie and Lambie. And Lambie gets to live a long happy life.
Oh my God.
With Sandra Bullock.
Did I not make my no Lambie conversation policy clear before I came on the air today?
It's pretty much my favorite thing when you reveal yourself as a girl's fanboy. It's pretty much the best.
Wait, who are you talking to?
You. All right, let's talk about movies real quick cuz Dave's here and it's not often on Puck Soup that we get a newsbreaker. In this room. Like, the last time it happened was probably Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, but that was before.
No, that was right around. I mean, he was still...
It was before the documentary and before the DMing
is junk.
This
news will have as deleterious effect in the Democratic Party and the country and the world as
I mean,
he did.
Weiner made news in the Yahoo offices for having walked out the previous night because he refused to be on a panel with Omarosa and Clay Aiken.
News, quote unquote.
And then he was on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Page Six
and
was all
And then he went to prison.
And then he went to prison.
Yeah.
How long is he there?
So how long will Will Smith be in prison for doing this movie?
All right, let's
how
talk,
long
okay.
will David Ayer be in director jail?
David Ehrlich wrote a review of Bright, which if you don't know what Bright is, it's a new Will Smith movie, which, you know, scant five, what, probably like 7 years ago was a really big deal when there was a new Will Smith movie. Well, this one.
Return of the Millennium, Big Willie style.
That's right, Big Willie style. So this one went straight to, well, not straight to, it was funded by Netflix. It's their first crack at doing a blockbuster movie. So it's Will Smith in a movie written by Max Landis, who did Chronicle and a bunch of not so good stuff.
American Ultra, Victor Frankenstein.
I was not a fan of American Ultra. I know that movie's got its defenders, no. But no. And then it's about, it's like, so it's Training Day, except Ethan Hawke is an orc.
Right. And it's not Ethan Hawke, it's Joel Edgerton, but your analogy is
But I mean, yeah,
on.
It's Joel Edgerton in the movie.
Yeah.
By the way, better Uncle Owen, Joel Edgerton or the guy who played him in A New Hope?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, perfect. It's a tie. So that it's a movie. It's like Training Day, except there's orcs and fairies. It was directed by David Ayer, who you may remember from
Suicide Squad.
He wrote and directed Suicide Squad, which was abjectly terrible. He wrote and directed Fury.
You did.
Which was pretty good.
What, the tank movie?
The tank movie. Mm. And then he wrote and directed End of Watch, which was, I thought was...
Yeah, he's got a big hard-on for the LAPD.
But it was, I thought End of Watch was good.
Yeah, I mean, for him, yeah. I mean, I thought it was an interesting choice. It was very sort of like visceral and gripping. It didn't really...
What was End of Watch?
It was like the almost all body cam...
With Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal
and Michael Pena.
Yeah, where it was like cinema verite. Yeah.
It's very much about all the same things. Movies are about crooked cops in L.A. and like how hard it is, members.
So David Ayer loves the police and Peter Berg loves the troops, right?
That's right. That's
David Ayer is not nearly as pro-police as what's his name? Peter Berg is pro-troops, but he certainly loves, like, you know, looking into that world.
David Ehrlich wrote one of the first reviews out of the gate of Bright and called it the single worst movie of 2017.
Yes.
And the reason why this becomes newsworthy is that David Ayer, the director of the film, responded to the review a few hours after, about roughly maybe like 4 or 5 hours after it went up, and said, quote, "This is going to be on my fridge. Highest compliment is a strong reaction either way."
No, it's not.
"This is fucking epic review. This is a fucking epic review. It's a big, fun movie. You can sure string words together, Mr. Ehrlich. I'd love to read any script you've written." And there's been some debate as to whether or not that last line was, in fact, a slag on you or a compliment of your work. Where do you fall on it?
Well, I was giving him the benefit of the doubt at the moment, and then as our back and forth went on, I had more reason to believe that he was being sincere. I mean, I think that, you know, he was...
Sincere.
Yeah, it's sincere. I think he was being sincere. I think, you know, his initial response does a very artful job of threading the needle between, you know, being a backhanded compliment and owning it. But I think that.
Have you ever had another director come at you like this?
Oh, sure.
Like who?
I mean, you know, just to a few points to clarify what you said. My opinion in and of itself, I think, is newsworthy. It was newsworthy before even David Ayer came on me. I think we can all agree.
Absolutely.
Then he did misspell my name, which is always fun because it's not only in the
In review, fairness, you have like you have everyone more H's than
there's
you
H's there,
name.
H's everywhere.
You got H's
but my,
to spare.
The best part about his tweet, I mean, this is a guy whose movies are like all about how like life on the streets and the LAPD and like how hard it is and like it's just like you don't have enough, like your dick's not big enough to be a cop. Like,
right, and how bad guys can be good guys sometimes too.
And he asterisked out the word fucked when he tweeted me, which I thought was great. But I thought that it was a really per my interpretation of what he was saying, I thought that he was taking it in stride and that it was a sort of a gracious way of handling it, relative to just like not saying anything at all. But I think he gets it. He knows the game, and he wants people talking about the movie one way or the other.
I thought it was interesting that he said that his take of you can the highest compliment is a strong reaction either way. I know you, Dave Lozo, don't agree with that.
Yeah, if you make a movie and someone strongly says it's the worst fucking thing they've ever seen, that's not what you're going for. That's not what you want.
But
from
no,
your,
but
from
I
people.
Tend to actually agree with them on this one, like because I feel like it's something that came up recently since The Disaster Artist came out, right?
Sure.
Where people have sort of reevaluating whether or not The Room was actually a good movie or not.
No, they're not, are they?
Yes, they are. There's an. I listened to an entire podcast with Paul Scheer, who was on the Canon podcast, sure. with Amy Nicholson, talking about the virtues of The Room, and the argument isn't that it's a good movie. I don't want to frame the argument that way. The argument is. Was it a more successful movie than we yes. think because it elicits such response from people?
Yeah, I haven't seen The Disaster Artist, but like I listened to the James Franco interview with Maron, and it really sounds like they don't want to ever come out and say it, but they're just basically making fun of Tommy to his face.
Oh,
they're framing it as like, oh, but there's such a response. You go to a theater and it's packed with people that love it.
Now
I don't
know.
It feels
Maron
like they're
making
fun of him.
The Maron interview with Franco, did they finally get around to the movie after they talked about a taco place that's no longer on the corner of La Hacienda?
No, that was the Greta Gerwig interview. Okay. Where they spent 20 minutes listing places in Sacramento they both knew. I was like, this is the most insane interview of all time. Can we move forward, please, and talk about Lady Bird?
But David Ehrlich, you agree with me. Like the idea that a movie can be successful, but like a movie needs to elicit some emotional
yes.
response.
I tend to agree with you. I also think that as far as The Disaster Artist is concerned, that James Franco sees a lot of himself in Tommy Franco, albeit like a more handsome, more talented version of himself and understands how it could have gone a different way and does have a soft spot for him. Also, he's just so fucking good in that movie as Tommy Wiseau.
Did you read the book?
No.
See, to me, I like the movie a lot, but I'm going to be one of these guys. I like the book better. But I like the book better because I feel like they had to cut some stuff out in the movie to get the rights to
the stuff.
I mean,
the movie is very Judd Apatow. It's all about a bromance.
Yeah.
It's like a lot – it's much – softer, more romantic, not in the like, not mm-hmm. in the romantic relationship way, but just the rosy-eyed glasses that it looks through, sort of a portrait of it. But I did enjoy it a lot.
Are there any?
I agree with David Ayer. Yeah. I see 300 movies a year that I have to review, and the most punishing, most forgettable, most painful ones that I have to do are like the ones that are right down the middle.
But see, like,
I don't know if it's like the highest compliment one way or the other.
Like if you're like, I hate this movie. It's one thing. It's one thing to be like, this is the worst. This is worse than the Emoji Movie.
He gave it an F and said it was worse than the Emoji Movie.
Yeah, like that's not what you're looking for. Yeah. Even in like a negative sense, I don't think that's what you want from your art.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if that's how you want to spin it, what does he care? Because as we saw this morning, they've already greenlighted the second movie.
That seemed like one of those moves because they knew the reviews were going to be dog shit and they just wanted to get behind it.
It's also Netflix.
Why does Will Smith
want to
do it?
Doesn't
Will Smith have better offers?
Well, he probably got paid a shit ton to be the
big name.
He's
rich.
Yeah.
He's Will Smith.
I mean, Will Smith also made it clear when – I mean, this was my takeaway from him backing out of Django Unchained was that he is just not interested in making good movies. He's interested in making, like, safe Will Smith movies.
Plus, he also worked with David Ayer on Suicide Squad, and he actually was one of the only redeeming things in that movie was Will Smith.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely was. There was two redeeming things, him and Margot Robbie.
Is he, like, dramatic actor Adam Sandler then, where he just wants to just make a bunch of money and not really try hard anymore?
He's like – Adam Sandler, if Adam Sandler never made Punch Drunk Love or Firewood Stories.
Like he's made Ali, he's made good movies.
He was great.
You bring up a really good point, though, about Will Smith, which is that why have Will Smith in your movie about cops and orcs if you don't use Will Smith like you should use Will Smith, which is to have him sing your theme song? So I've put together, I wrote a theme song for Bright, Will Smith song that I'm hoping that if Big Willie is listening to the song, to podcast now, that he does quickly drop this track to get more people to watch Bright now that David Ehrlich really gave it an F.
Yeah.
So this is Will Smith's.
Do you need me to like clap out a beat or anything?
I'll just a cappella it. Yeah. Yeah. Willie Wills. Jack Antonoff. Because I just assumed Jack Antonoff would probably produce the song. He produces most things. B-R-I-T-E, no G for the G's, no H for the haters. Yo, Daryl Ward, second lieutenant, LAPD, Men in Black and Blue, better not step to me, because that's his name, the name of his character in the...
Don't explain your joke, just go.
We're there.
Got crazy mad creatures like it's Lord of the Rings, bagging bad guys like Frodo, but I'm Lord of the Bling. Yo, player, you better not act like a dork. Big Willie is a cop and his partner is an orc. Now, like every Will Smith song,
here comes
you have
the
to
man
get
in bright.
Yeah, it's built on a previous song. Men in Black was built on Send Me Forget Me Nots, and Wild Wild West was built on the Stevie Wonder song, and also Wild Wild West by Big Eddie King. Mm-hmm. So I thought this one should be built on.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Yeah, well, you need to get to the hook. So why if you've got a movie named Bright, what do you do? What do you build the song on? Obviously, Rachel Platten's fight song, feminist anthem fight song.
Is this what you're doing all morning when I'm texting you and you're not
trying
replying?
To sing the hook?
This is my bright song, my fairy light song, orcs are all right, so hung, and no one can see it unless you pay the Netflix fee.
And you voluntarily record a podcast with this man on the
So David, what do you what's your best picture for this year?
Well, now I'm thinking it might be Bright.
Right, cuz the theme song convinced you.
Listen,
right?
I've been singing Sweet Golden Nights for the last week. So like, who am I to say?
We've talked about it before, but I was in Vegas for most of the last week, and like the fact that they bought that, they play it at the end of the first intermission. As sort of now tradition.
Oh, they moved it up.
They don't play it during the game anymore.
Did they actually put the Sweet Golden Knights spin on it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They have the words on the screen,
and
like a sing-along.
Did you invent this?
They played it the first night, the first game that they ever had there.
But it was
in the end of the third period.
It was like the middle of the third. Also, that was their first home game. They had the thing for the first responders
position,
and stuff, so they couldn't do it early.
Yeah,
probably.
They had a position had in sort of that Washington Capitals military appreciation night spot where they tried to get the crowd going. But now they've moved it to the end of the first intermission, but it's still a sing-along. They put the words on the screen. Sweet Golden Knights.
Wow. It's very Vegas-y.
I think Get Out might win Best Picture.
Yeah?
I'd be surprised to see that happen.
You think so? Like the Oscar?
I think it could happen.
Wow.
It's I came out of the Post being super bullish about that. And I don't know. The past few weeks I've just been thinking it over and thinking that I think it might end up being Get Out.
Is that your pick? Is that your favorite movie of the year?
No. I mean, I liked it a lot.
What was your number one?
It was probably Call Me By Your Name.
That was great.
Oh, that's right. That was your number one in the... Yeah.
That movie surprised the hell out of me because I really thought it was... I was watching it and loving it. And I was like, when is the part where some town elder, you know, looks at this relationship and they have to go on the run together or something? And it never happened. It's just a sweet movie about this romance.
Yeah. 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 And it's a great Hanukkah movie. It's good for the Jews. It goes a long way for me. It really, although I have to say, I'm deeply perturbed by the fact that Armie Hammer is Jewish and I am Jewish. And I look at Armie Hammer and I'm like, how are we the same? what went wrong in my physiology in the past? Because we must be like 10th cousins or something, you know, that got us here.
Yeah, he's an Adonis and he's got that amazing voice where he would have been a really good
actor.
I look like David Schwimmer, you know, something went wrong.
How dare we talk badly about David Schwimmer in this room in my presence? It's a handsome man.
I saw Lady Bird, I thought it was great, but I feel like the Academy would say that's sort of a
Lady Bird is crushing it. I mean, that'll definitely be in the mix.
But do you think that they'll look at it and be like, it's just a normal coming-of-age story?
No, I think it is faring better in people's minds than that. Whether or not it has enough to sort of get over the finish line, I don't know. I don't think so, but it will be in the mix for everything people will be talking about.
Is there a Moonlight that's going to just start crushing it like late in the award season?
Well, I mean, Get Out, which has obviously been around for a while and made like, you know, 100 times what Moonlight did in theaters and has been like a seismic sort of event in the culture, had not been talked a lot about as an awards contender for most of the year. And then the nominations for these sort of precursor awards started coming out and Get Out was nominated for all of them and people are suddenly coming around to it.
Do you think the Academy cares if a movie's in the zeitgeist? Like, to me, like, the fact that Get Out was such a huge hit and both The Sunken Place and, you know, Where the Keys or Give Me the Keys, that part of the flick, have both become like pop culture shorthand.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to talk about in like a monolithic group, but I do think that as they get younger and more diverse, which they have over the past 2 years, they made a huge effort to change what the makeup of the voting body is. I think it'll matter more and more. I think it does hurt for a movie like Dunkirk, which I thought was incredible, but it's not exactly like, you know, you're not looking at what's happening in the news today. I mean, like, it's a real Dunkirk out there. I think that definitely, especially because the movie came out in July. I mean, it hurts.
I wish I had seen Get Out when it first came out because I feel like I was tainted when I saw it.
I was tainted by everybody.
Sundance premiere. It was a secret screening at midnight, and I was sitting right in front of Malia Obama and her Secret Service people who were all like West Wing style plain clothes. Like, just we're here because we just love movie. Yeah. And we're packing our heat, and it was great.
I feel like there's a hype train for it that people might, you know, duck out of the way of when they see it. Because it works really, really well. But like when you see it, I think when the hype train is speeding that fast, you want to get knocked over by it. And I don't think it knocks you over if you watch it on home at home.
But you know, when you make $200-some-odd million, the hype trains are, you've been driving the hype train. I mean, like, maybe that, people are on that.
Because like for me, like that's the key scene. Like at that point in the movie, it's like, yeah, I know Allison Williams is part of this. Like, this isn't like a turning point of the movie. And it was like an hour and 10 minutes in.
I was shocked. I look at Allison Williams.
I was shocked too.
an angel. How could she do that?
She was Peter Pan, for God's sakes.
And like after I watched it,
how could you?
And like people were texting me, they were like, "Oh, what'd you think of the milk scene?" And I'm like, "Harvey Milk? What milk scene are you talking about?" And everyone was like, there was like stories about the scene how she eats her cereal. I was like,
that's
I just
like a shot. It's not a scene. It's like
it's like a quick little thing. And I'm just like, yeah,
it is a good one.
All right, I'm putting. Here's what we're gonna do because we need to talk about The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
I am putting my phone up. I'm gonna hit the stopwatch. We're going to talk about it for 5 minutes. If you don't want any spoilers, come back in 5 minutes. We're going to sync up right now. Ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, just so you don't have to bitch at us. 1, and go. All right.
I can't believe fucking Luke Skywalker dies.
Wow.
In a bout of autoerotic asphyxiation. I did not see that scene coming there.
You know, it's closer to the truth than I ever would guess.
This is not going to come the way you expect.
Well, this is already, I think, the most insightful Star Wars conversation I've been a part of.
You loved it and I loved it and other people didn't, and I can't understand why.
I wanted to say, what's not to love? And then a voice in my head said, everything. I mean, I loved it for, I think, a lot of the reasons that a lot of people hated it, a very vocal minority at least, which is that it just demolishes the Star Wars legacy. And it does that to liberate Star Wars from its own past and ensure that it will have a future. But it is, as someone who is not, like, married to Star Wars, I just want to see a good movie. And I think that they did a really beautiful job of disabusing all of the nerds, all of the Gregs out there from their precious Star Wars characters.
He knows
and, you know, saying it's got to be about the new generation. You can't be beholden to the past. And I, you know, the moment because Force Awakens was so much of a redux of New Hope, and it really just set up this movie to knock it down. And the moment that Snoke gets cut in half, and you could just feel like they were just like, fuck that. Like, this is not the story you thought it was going to be.
First of all, the real Gregs. Not the fake Gregs. Oh. The real Gregs look at this movie and realize it is made by someone who has an explicit love of Star Wars and Rian Johnson, and a guy who put a movie together, and everything the movie does, even if you disagree with it, is canonical. Like all the shit that Luke Skywalker does in this movie, exiling himself. He would never do that. He's a hero. Fucking Yoda was a hero. He went and lived in a swamp and got high for fucking 50 years until Luke showed up. Like, everything there that they do with that character, almost every character, is canonical. Even the Jedi Poppins scene that people really don't like in the flick, all she's doing is force pulling herself to the ship.
Yeah.
And within canon and within the EU, there was times when the Jedi could, you know, hold their breath in space and shit. So, like, it's all there. And the two things I'll say about it are this. One, it's as much a beautiful repudiation of the J.J. Abrams mystery box filmmaking trope
although
as anything.
I do think it's better for coming on the heels of that movie.
It is.
And they do sort of work in conversation with one another.
They do, but I do love the fact that, you know, it's basically a movie that acknowledges that kind of filmmaking sets up questions and sets up scenarios that will never pay off. Like, you could come up with any possible thing for Rey and her lineage, and it wouldn't have been satisfying to a vast majority of the audience.
Right. Oh, is she Luke's kid?
No. Oh. She's not Luke's kid.
That was
my
guess.
See it yet. No,
no, I'm never going to.
She's nobody.
I don't want to.
Like, literally, the movie's like, you're nobody. Yeah, and to the point. And,
who's
and
in it?
Phoebe from Friends.
No, she's not.
The actual Phoebe.
And I thought that one of the most brilliant parts of that flick, where he's not only like, you're nobody. He's not only like, you're nobody. He's like, you're not a part of this story.
It's the best.
I was
fucking screaming at the screen. Not
this isn't your story. So, like, the fact that they puncture that balloon, they puncture the Snoke balloon, they do all this stuff.
Who's Snoke?
So Snoke was the big hologram that talked to Kylo Ren.
He was
going to
be like the new emperor was how he was positioned. Yeah.
Oh. And he winds up being this old wrinkly fuck in a bathrobe who just gets killed in the movie. He just gets sliced in half by Kylo Ren.
Yeah, he makes a slight miscalculation when trying to figure out what's going on with Kylo Ren, and it does not end in his favor.
And then the other thing I'll say about the flick too is that I appreciate that in this time, in 2017, for a movie to have that number of swerves that worked, and not worked in the sense that I'm a naive fanboy, but even coming to the movie with a cynical eye, there are plot machinations in this movie that no one fucking saw.
Well, just to have swerves at all, I mean, you're talking about a kind of filmmaking where all these massive tentpoles that the studios are making these days that have to be safe more than anything else.
Right.
They have to lead to more of them. And I think that you would think that Star Wars would be the safest of all of them, despite the fact that it's like guaranteed to be this, you know, monolithic hit. But for that movie of all movies to take so many chances,
right,
I think sends It's unfortunate about some of the blowback because I think it could potentially send a really encouraging message to all the other studios
who are working. And it's a beautiful story because at the end of the day, it gets back to the original premise of A New Hope before we got into this whole Skywalker family bullshit, which is random farm boy on a desert planet can be the fucking hero that saves the galaxy.
Yeah.
And at the end of this flick, the same kind of message is being sent. And it's a beautiful message.
Yeah, no matter how it sort of shakes out with what the fans think about this movie, it needed to happen to free Star Wars from its past, from those characters, and really hit home that this universe is bigger than those characters you loved when you were growing up, because there are going to be movies for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
And you're going to – can't just be watching all of them being like, but where's Luke?
Mm-hmm.
Like
– yeah, like Edgar Wright's Jedi Driver when that comes out.
Wait, my question though, real quick.
We're past five.
Is
don't make a spoiler.
How many – like Rogue One, how many claymation dead people from the previous movies are in it where I have to pretend like they don't look like claymation?
Oh, man, I was incensed about that.
Right.
It was so bad. It looks fucking awful.
It does.
And
but people were arguing in the reviews. They were like, I couldn't even tell. Like, I could not look away from Tark or whatever his name was
in
Rogue One. Yeah, like, I was just like, oh, my God. He's
mind-boggling. He's a hard zero.
Hard zero. Last thing I'll say about the flick, and it's not a spoiler, is that the backlash depresses me too, but makes total sense when you realize where it's coming from, which is people that are slightly older than I am, who could be considered to be baby boomers, who loved Star Wars and lined up for Star Wars in 77, and now are watching a movie whose basic underlying premise is you fucked everything up and now kids have – girls, little girls have to fix it because you had a chance to save the world and you fucked it up because you're selfish.
Girls, not white people. Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't. This isn't the America I was promised.
So some 50-year-old guy starts a petition on petition.org. Take this out of canon. Well, no shit. Because you don't like what it's saying about you, because you had a chance to save the universe and you fucked it up, and now minority kids and girls have to fix it.
Yeah, and everything is political. I mean, there is definitely a solid overlap in the Venn diagram between right-wing types and those who reject this movie outright.
Who's Finn? Is Finn someone that voted for Trump and then realized he was wrong and now
Finn
is
was
on...
born into a Trump household?
Okay.
And one day was like, wait,
he had like
no.
He had an awakening where he was like, wait, hold on.
Oh, he had an awakening.
Yeah.
The Finn Awakens.
Yes. And there is like, and there's that Rose character, right? So it really is a whole like DSA versus Trump kind of a movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a threat of it for sure.
Right. Just and General Hux is a fake Nazi.
General Hux is a hilarious fake Nazi.
He's the best fake. You know, if you're going to be a fake Nazi in this day and age, you might as well be General Hux because he's just great. All right, David Ehrlich, where can people find your stuff?
You can find me on IndieWire.com, which is where I work and write about movies. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich. There are, despite what David Ehr might tell you, two H's in my name, E-H-R-L-I-C-H. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks again for joining us for this hockey discussion.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to David Ehrlich, critic extraordinaire, who predicts Get Out will be the best picture of the year. I think that's a bold prediction.
Be nice for the first time in like 5 years that I could actually say I've seen the best picture when it wins best picture.
You never saw Moonlight? You didn't make time for Moonlight?
I never saw Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
12 Years a Slave won, right? Oh, I saw that after.
No, that didn't win.
That didn't win?
No.
What won that year?
I don't think that won that year, did it?
No, I had to. That definitely won that year.
Did it?
That was 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
Jeez, here we go.
This is the research we do on PuckSoup podcast, where we shout out things and say they're true and then check right away to see if they're not true.
Do they have a thing? I went to the Wikipedia. I always like on the Wikipedia page for players.
Just go to IMDb. It says
you could see what gold medals they won. Accolades.
What else came out that year?
It earned 3 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
Yeah.
All right. So there it did win.
Yeah. but I saw that after. I don't know if I can't remember the last movie I saw.
Yeah, 12
before.
Years a Slave. I can't believe I didn't remember. What year was that? That was 2014. Yeah, 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the movies that it beat. American Hustle.
It was better than that.
It was better than that. It was better than Captain Phillips.
Yeah, better
it
than
was
Captain Phillips.
Better than Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, Dallas Buyers Club was really good.
It was better than Nebraska.
Never saw it.
It was better than Her, which I'm not as high on as many
that's
people.
A fucking bad movie.
It was better than Philomena.
Never saw. Oh, I did see Philomena.
But was 12 Years a Slave and with the gift of hindsight,
mm-hmm.
better than Gravity and or The Wolf of Wall Street? Oh,
they're just such different movies. No, I would say. See, you know what's funny is Sandra Bullock won Best Best Actress.
For Gravity, yeah.
No, she won Best Actress for The Blind Side, where she played like a sassy Southern mom.
Oh, wait, you're right. She didn't win for Gravity.
She lost. Gravity was like 175 times a better performance than what she did in The Blind Side, and she didn't fucking win.
She lost to Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine back in the time when you could win an award for a Woody Allen movie.
Well, based on what we've seen so far, I feel like you could still make Woody Allen movies because no one's coming out and saying, well, yeah. Not no one, but
Woody Allen movies don't make any money.
Woody Allen movies have seemed to have somehow limboed in like Ocean's 12 French Guide around the laser beams of the last 2 months. I can't figure that one out.
Woody Allen dancing through the lasers.
By the way, this has pretty much been a Sandra Bullock podcast. We've discussed Ocean's 8, we've discussed Gravity, and now we've discussed The Blind Side.
Thoughts on Miss Congeniality, Dave?
My friend's in the sequel.
Who's your friend?
My friend Willie Mack from college. My roommate was he lives in LA, and he was like doing stuff where he was an extra. He's an extra in Miss Congeniality 2, where they're at like the what do you call it? What's that show called where it's like La Cage aux Folles or whatever it is where it's like men dressing up as women. It's a drag show
yeah.
And like he's it's funny like it's from like 12 years ago. He's like in the front row like pretending to laugh at stuff, and there he is.
There he is.
See him in the movie.
Speaking of a drag, the Pittsburgh Penguins are as we do the show currently outside of the playoff race. Outside the wild card. But as we talked about earlier in the show, the Metro is the group of death. It's the group of death right now. And I don't quite know how it's going to shake out. Right now, Washington Devils jackets in the playoff picture and the Jet Rangers and Islanders, as we do the show, are in the wild card. Philadelphia lost 10 games in a row and yet is still tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins in points as we do the show.
Because they kept getting points when they were losing. They lost like 5 times after regulation because the NHL's stupid.
If dollars to donuts, Flyers or Penguins make the playoffs?
Oh, Penguins.
Now, do you think the Penguins are going to be... Because, you know, the talk around the team is that the little moves that they made recently are...
Little? You're calling Michael Layton a little move,
okay,
sir?
Okay, well, granted, Jamie Oleksy is a... What did I say the name wrong?
Jamie Oleksiak,
right, sorry. Stephen Oleksy, Jamie Oleksiak swimmer, is tall. I believe is not. It would be a big move because he's tall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the whole point of that.
And he's
and also to fuck up a name.
Yeah,
as is tradition.
Yeah, we'll edit it out. Maybe.
But I feel like they could pull some blockbuster deal, but it's gonna mean they have to move roster players because they're kind of up against it on the cap.
I don't think they need to do anything. I think after the All-Star break they'll be fine.
You think so?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they need a center like. Hella bad.
Riley Sheahan is not the answer. Not the answer.
There it is.
He's not the new Jordan Stahl or Jarrett Stoll. If you're playing Schlemcode.
Schlemcode.
The Kings. Remember the Kings when they were so super good in possession and they played a bunch of playoff games and they missed the playoffs that year. And up until game 79, we were like, they'll figure it out. The Penguins are like that, but I think they're better than that Kings team. I think they're still only 2 points out, right?
Yeah.
They're fine.
I don't think they're fine.
Hot take, Greg Wyszynski.
I think they're tired. I made that joke earlier about them finding their legs in May. I mean, they played a lot of hockey in the last 2 years.
They're fine.
I don't think they're fine.
Sidney Crosby hasn't really reached his usual self yet.
I don't think they're fine.
Wait, that sounds like he was trying to like blow himself in the car. Sidney Crosby hasn't become... Dude, no, that's not the phrase I want to use.
Dear penthouse, I was outside the playoff picture when all of a sudden...
Does Sidney Crosby like...
Self-filating. Yeah. Without question.
No, I say no. I think he finds that to be selfish. He's not... He's satisfying
so
himself.
So him allowing someone to fillet him is him being giving?
No, if he was fillating someone else...
Oh,
then that's
well, I didn't realize then that was where you're going with that.
Yeah, no. Like if he did it to himself, he'd be like, "Well, you know, I can just do it."
He
to
would
someone
just
else.
Should give you the assist.
Yes.
See, to me, I think Sidney Crosby likes self-elating because, like, a bit of a perfectionist. You know, I don't know if a lot of people would be able to really figure out the ins and outs of it. You know, so I take care of it myself. You know.
Like self-elating is like having a 2-on-0 with an empty net, and he would pass that off every time. He would just say, "Here, you take it." He wouldn't do it to himself.
Could he self-elate with that hockey butt though?
Well, the butt wouldn't get in the way. I mean, hockey players, I don't know. It depends on how flexible I guess he is, right? Like it's all about.
Would it help? You could push everything up a little bit.
Oh yeah.
So stupid podcast.
So So he's on his back, and his butt is giving him like an extra eight inches.
It's almost like as if it's on a like the kind of tray you'd get when you get breakfast in bed. It's kind of elevated.
Boy, and that's our podcast ruining breakfast in bed for the rest of your life. Thanks for listening.
I think the Penguins make a significant trade to give them a kick in the ass.
Who are they going to get though?
I don't know.
There's no
market for it, and also like the UFA market for like impact forwards is crazy. Crazy thin outside of like John Tavares.
Well, wait, hang on.
Oh, stop it. No.
I mean, they do have...
Garth, Jim Rutherford here.
Hold on.
How about I gives ya a first round pick and a nice young boy named Brian Rust and a bag of delicious Werther's Originals for the services of Jonathan Tavares... For the span of a few months, and then, much like an Australian boomerang, he goes back to your team afterwards. Garth?
Hang on, sorry. I was counting how many years I had left in my contract that I got after Charles Wong sold the team, and it's still in the double digits. But, yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Okay, you drive a hard bargain. I'll throw in a porcelain Hummel figure of a little brown poodle that we have here in the front room, the sitting room, in our home in Raleigh.
All right. You throw in Tristan Jarry. I'll give him a 12-year contract.
Who? We don't have a guy named Jerry.
Jim, can you put your son on the phone, please?
Hello. This is Jim Rutherford Jr.
They're like the Mandelbaums on Seinfeld, where each guy's like 100 years old, 90 years old, and 80 years old. Rutherford.
Could you hurry it up? My dad and I have to go to an AARP meeting.
Hold on, dinner's at 4. Hurry up. We gotta get off the phone.
Who makes the playoffs out of the Metro if you had to be a betting man right
Ready?
Now? Ready? Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I can be a betting man.
Yep.
You're at the betting window. Oh, I can't
Jesus
be a betting
Christ.
Man.
Sure,
sure, sure, sure. Okay. Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Book it.
All right. I agree. Columbus, book it.
Are we talking top three or the whole?
The whole shebang. There are 5 potential playoff spots for Metropolitan Division teams. Mm-hmm. Which teams in the Metropolitan will make the playoffs? So there will definitely be 3, but will they be 5?
Washington, Columbus.
Oh, I agree.
The Rangers.
Agreed.
I come around on them. They're back to their same old bullshit where they get outshot by 10 shots every night, and Lundqvist is .920 again. So
little worried about the NYI.
I don't think the Islanders are going to do it. Pittsburgh will be 4, one of the 4. And then we have the Devils. What do I do with that team? They're kind of like the Rangers in a way because they have the goalie. They're not that great defensively. They have the guys that can score. But will they keep it going for the last 47-ish games?
I would say
yes.
My guarantees are
I'll
the Caps.
I'll say
yes. You'll say yes. The Devils are in.
Caps, Blue Jackets, Penguins for sure.
I say Caps, Blue Jackets, Penguins for sure. And if it's between the Flyers, the Hurricanes, the Rangers, and the Islanders... and the Devils, obviously. I don't want to get yelled at again by the Rangers. I feel like me and the Rangers have really made our peace, but I would say the Devils and the Islanders, and the Rangers are out.
Yeah, the Rangers they look like they have the last 2 years again. They're where I don't think they're great, but
they might just be there at the end.
They're just they just have this thing where like the Ducks game on Tuesday.
You think the Islanders have peaked? We've seen peak Islanders.
Before the year, the Rangers and Islanders were 2 teams I was kind of like, on, where I thought if things broke right, they could get in. And Lundqvist, he's back to being .920 again. And the Islanders have the worst goaltending in hockey. And Matt Barzal is out of his mind. And they're still a fringe team. Like, I just don't think they're going to be able to do it for the rest of the year.
Carolina's still a team I can't figure out. The Flyers are good, but I just don't think that they're good enough quite yet.
I don't think the Flyers are good.
I do.
I think they're okay.
Sure.
I don't think they're...
They're only a... As we do the show, they're only a -1 in goal differential.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's kind of what they are. You know, they've got... Like, it's weird. There's all these guys this year that are having super duper career years. Like Sean Couturier is suddenly like a dominant force, and still, like, the Flyers have gotten like an extra 20% out of him this year, and they're still not a playoff team yet. So
Vegas has a plus 16 in goal differential, by the way. Just want to mention that again.
That includes shootouts, though, right? So what are they like plus 11? This is just... NHL.com website counts
you
the goal
are,
differential.
You are such a denier. Haters gonna hate, as Taylor Swift once said. Before we get to the question of the week, wanted to touch again on the Belmont thing with the Islanders. I'm happy it saved the franchise. I don't want to see him move, but like, can we just as two guys that live in the area, you know, two guys, New Yorkers, having a bagel with a schmear.
Hey, I'm taking the train over here.
Just an FAN on the way in. Oh man,
Frances is off the air. What am I gonna do all day at work?
this dog. We don't need another fucking arena in this area. I mean, no one wants to say that because everybody's euphoric about the Islanders. But who needs another arena?
Wait, are you saying you don't want the Islanders here anymore?
I'm saying we don't need out. We have MSG, Barclays.
Oh, another one built.
The Rock. A renovated Nassau, and now we need Belmont. We need Islanders Park at Belmont Yards or whatever the fuck it's going to be. Mm. Belmont Park at Islanders Yards.
Yeah.
We don't need another arena. I don't know why they're. I don't know what. Like, there's a finite number of things that tour, and even less now that the circus is done. So, what's going to be at this arena? What's coming through? What's filling the dates? Hmm. What's the WWE going to pick every time they come through? Barclays or Belmont?
I mean, it could still fall through. You never know.
It's not going to fall through.
It could fall through. And plus, there's all and this notion that like it's a completely non-taxpayer funded thing is kind of a little bit of a bullshit.
It's
line
bullshit,
too.
And by yeah, and
I don't like
there
so
was,
much.
There was some quote about like they're gonna pay $40 million in rent, and like yay, and then someone's like, wait,
not per
that,
year.
Is that for the life of the 49-year like the lease they have? And he's like, yeah,
yep.
I'm like, oh, so basically it's my rent.
Yeah, basically like the Islanders are like the guy in the USA Today thing. Like they're a single person who rents for $1 million a year, and oh look at this! And plus, they have to build a more sustainable or a more permanent rail line to get out there too. Like it's
a whole thing.
All for
it's
the
a whole infrastructure project.
All for the 12th best local team in the area.
A team that literally has never shown that they can be
a
gigantic dominant fan base. Even in their best days, they've never been like them and the Devils are kind of like on par as far as fan base. The only difference being that the Devils. Or another state. Well, the Islanders are in another county.
Yeah, you and Islander fans are basically like the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other. I don't care about that team. No one cares about that team. And you're just like pointing at each other.
Our glory days are all behind us.
Yeah.
And
yeah. They had the 70s and 80s. You had the 90s and the aughts.
Yeah, there's something to that.
And the Rangers were just completely mediocre the whole time except for that one year.
Yep. And then we're both like, we're going to get you, Rangers. And they're like, who are you?
Yeah. Yeah, the Rangers are like Doc Ock. They're just like, yeah, like I have 8 tentacles. I can destroy you whenever I want.
We're going to get you. I'm sorry. I was going after my precious tritium. Are you – who are you again? We're the New York Islanders, and we're going to take over this town. Oh, are you? Are you a member of the Original Six? No, we're an expansion – okay, shut up. No one gives a shit. Are you Boston? No, we're from Nassau County?
Think about all the things the Devils and the Islanders have in common. New arenas in the last like 5 to 10 years.
Stop it.
The Rangers don't care about you, even though you want the Rangers to desperately care about you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What other? Like there's a train that goes out there that nobody wants to take to the arena.
That's true.
You're not good anymore.
We both had what would be the shared Islander Devils player of note?
Who's that?
I don't know who it'd be.
Laurie Boschman.
I was going to say Sergei Nemchinov, but he was also a Ranger.
You've had Zach Parise bail. They're going to have John Tavares bail.
And they had JP Parise. Oh wait, no, was he a Ranger? I think it was a Ranger, wasn't
he? No, he was an Islander.
He's an Islander. There you go.
He was an Islander. Yeah. There's a commonality there that you don't want to see.
I don't want to see it.
Much like the way the Jedi and the Ewoks formed a bond to defeat the. I don't know.
Our question of the week was. What is the worst Christmas present that you ever received, either as a child or as an adult?
Gentilly's crack me up. I want to see Gentilly's.
Casual Friday said, a Detroit Tigers t-shirt. I'm from Pittsburgh and I've never liked baseball.
Christ.
Gentilly's answer? Are you talking about
The NASA thing?
I was into the space program, so my grandma gave me a framed signed photo. Not an astronaut, though. Literally a random guy from NASA. He was her friend's nephew or something. He could have been like an IT guy. Another year, I guess she thought I wanted to take up golf, so she bought me one of a thing that automatically returned balls after you put it into it, and a 3-wood. That's the worst. That is one of the toughest parts about the holidays is like relatives that you tangentially sort of know that maybe in a passing conversation you said something about liking something, and then you just get
right.
A 5-present series of
it's,
those things.
It's like the opposite of like a friend or a girlfriend or a boyfriend who like casually mentions, oh man, I'd love to go see that yeah. show. And then you store it right. away and then you buy the tickets at some point.
My mom's like that. Like my daughter was like at one point read a book once. Like that's the only book she ever read. It might be. And then like my mom found out like what book it was. So she went to like fucking Costco and bought like a 24 book yeah. box set of the book. And my kid's just like, come on.
And especially with kids.
She's like, Dad, I just learned a new word, kindling.
Yeah.
I think I have some for you.
And like the shit you like when you're 4, I'm assuming you probably don't even like it when you're 5, right?
Buying shit for kids is the worst. Yeah. Because kids literally, from the time you buy it on like December 10th to the 25th, you're just, it's like buying a really shitty Christmas tree. You're just like, please let the needles not fall off before the 25th. You buy something for a kid on the 10th, by the time it's the 25th, you're like, please tell me you still like Pokemon and like you haven't gone. And now you're like, I like firemen or some shit.
Like how old does a kid get when the kid finally can start saying they like or don't like gifts? You know what I mean? Like when a kid's 2, you can get the kid fucking sporks.
Well, when the kid's 2, the kid likes wrapping paper.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They're basically like dogs or cats still at that point, right. where you can just like put them in a box and they're wrapping.
You could fill the box with like shredded newspaper and then they'll just be like, wow.
It makes all kinds of crazy sounds when I touch it. Yeah, this is like, awesome.
Here, throw it in the air. Throw it over your head. Whoa!
So is it like 5 when like you get them like an Animaniacs doll and they're like, Dad, I like the Animaniacs last year.
Kind of, but I, like my kid's 7, right? And like she won't tell you she doesn't like a gift, but she definitely will tell you that she likes a gift.
Mm.
So on like Christmas, there's going to be a bunch of shit in the back of the tree that like she doesn't really give a shit about. Like for example, one of the gifts she's getting, which I think is kind of fun, and I'm saying this because she doesn't listen to the podcast.
What?
I know, surprisingly. It's a kit where you can make your own like Lush bath bomb, like a thing that you throw in the bathtub and it makes bubbles. Like It's a kit where you can make your own out of different like flavors and colors and shit.
Flavors of bubbles?
Sure.
Okay.
So like I think this is a pretty cool gift, and she likes crafts and shit. But I can guarantee you that's a back of the tree box.
Yeah.
Because something else is going to be like, oh my god, this is the thing I want.
Well, at Christmas you get more than one gift, so I can see how like sometimes they take a little back seat. But like at birthdays and stuff, you get the one. I guess you get more than one gift for your birthday too.
Daniel Kleinberg says that he got a hot glue gun a year after he got a hot glue gun.
Is that like a metaphor for something?
Brett Bodner writes in a shoe shine kit. Why? Because I was 8 years old and wasn't wearing dress shoes for at least another 5 years. I don't know why.
Like some people like Scott over here. Scott's like a scarf and beanie glove set. Like, what's wrong with that? I can use a scarf. Use a new beanie.
Some dude named Kevin writes in that he and his sister were 15 and 17 years old respectively when their mom gave them as a joint Christmas present Bruce Moose on the Loose, the motorized musical wild moose chase game, which is for ages 4 and up.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like a board game or something.
This one's good. When I was 10, this was from Brona McAuliffe. When I was 10, I asked for the Scooter 2000 robot on the left. My parents searched everywhere and got me the scooter on the right, which is just a Razor scooter.
That one guy said that, I think, who is this? His mom, maybe? Oh, one year my sister gave me books that she had checked out from the library. She even wrapped them, but she checked them out so far in advance that they were overdue by the time I opened them on Christmas. And she also gave me tickets to Lilith Fair for my 15th birthday because she wanted to go. Now, that's a tough one. Like, I give Ruby presents sometimes. And I also give my mom presents, come to think of it. That are specifically made for like a couple's experience.
Going somewhere together. Yeah.
Like my mom doesn't mind because like if I give her a gift card to like Outback Steakhouse, like she's great. I don't have to pay for Outback Steakhouse or whatever.
But so like does she go there by herself and just like hoover 2 steaks?
No, she goes there with my dad. But like when I get like Ruby like If I got her like Bulls tickets for like Bulls Nets, like that's clearly for me. Like I could tell her, hey, go take your friend to the Bulls game, but that's horseshit. Like I clearly want to go. Is that bad? Is that bad form to do that?
Oh no, you're married.
Okay,
that's
their rules.
I mean, you're probably gonna go do the thing together anyway.
Lindsay says, when I was 13, I received only a potted plant from my parents. That's it. My single gift for Christmas was a potted plant, and I have no idea why.
Oh, wait, this is my favorite one, Greg Chin. I asked for quote magic cards, but wasn't specific enough, and everyone that year thought I was really into magic, not Magic the Gathering. I received whole kits for magic, wands, fake handcuffs, and a deck of cards.
Did you read parents. Adam Peringio's yet?
No.
I was sick in bed and couldn't have dinner with my family who was over. My aunt wandered into my room drunk.
Uh-oh.
All right.
Uh-oh.
What a gift that was. And asked what I wanted for Christmas. In my sixth state, I said I wanted corn pops. 4 months later, I opened up the gift from my aunt, and it was a jumbo box of corn pops.
Yeah.
The dude's saying, I want corn pops because my belly hurts.
In 4 months. But
that's exactly what we're talking
about. That's what old people do, is they hear you like one thing one time, and it's just not really a thing that you're going to like forever. And they just, oh, I thought you liked sweaters. You commented that one time in 1984 about how you liked a sweater on TV. Oh, fuck. So this is what I'm stuck with for the rest of my life? Sweaters?
All right. Do you got any more?
No, I think that's...
I'll tell you, my worst gift ever. It wasn't. See, here's the thing. Like, usually the worst gifts are cheap shit that like maybe my aunt would get me,
mm-hmm.
like shirts that don't really fit from like Walmart, but like it's like a Jets shirt, and it's just like she's at Walmart and she knows I like the Jets, so she picks up a shirt but doesn't think about anything about proportions or anything,
no.
and no style either. It's like the sports gear that you'd get at a Walmart is always going to be like the most horrific shit you could right. possibly find.
Like New York Jets in big letters on yeah. the front of a white t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So maybe that would be the worst gift. But like the worst gift I ever got was laser tag, only because like it was the hot shit gift that Christmas. So in a sense, it's the best gift. But in the sense that we played it once, it didn't work. And then me and my friends in the neighborhood never played it again.
Mm.
So it just got packed away. So it wound up being the worst gift.
My worst gift was... the Hulkamania workout set. Remember that?
Yeah. With like a headband and shit?
There was like a headband. There was like little tiny dumbbells. But like there really wasn't much in there. It came in like this little blue locker, this blue plastic locker. And it had one of those hand grippy things. And I remember just thinking like, I can't work out with this. This is stupid. this isn't gonna get me jacked for middle school. Like I need to be jacked for when I try out for the middle school basketball team. And it was like a hand grippy thing and like two dumbbells that were like 3 pounds each.
I'll say this also about worst gifts. My dad is a huge fan of a series of gifts that are all related and like building up to the big gift.
Oh my God.
Kind of thing. Or
that's
like
that's a lot of pressure.
You get or you get the big gift and you get like all the accessories for that gift. And sometimes he would fuck up. And it would be like, my big gift would be like a Nerf gun, right? Or whatever. And like the thing I'll open was like the Nerf darts first.
Ah.
And it's like, well, this kind of takes the air out of that big package in the back.
So like it's like a riddle that's super easy to figure out.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if you're in a big gift is like a fucking Soda Stream or something. And the first thing you open is a bunch of carbon cartridges. It's like kind of ruins the surprise a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Merry Christmas, everybody. This is obviously our last show before Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you and all yours and happy and healthy holidays and all that jive.
Hanukkah's over, right? Or is today the last day?
Well, the time the podcast comes, it's probably over.
Yeah. Podcast. And Christmas will probably be over by the time they listen to this, too.
No, you'll probably listen to it on the way to your loved one's house with the kids in the car.
Yeah.
You know, us motherfucking all over the
listen
place.
Listen us to, yeah, cock shit balls, fuck. Yeah.
Please leave lovely reviews of this podcast on iTunes if you dig it. It's always appreciated. And obviously, if you are not a Patreon subscriber, the Patreon is there. You just go to patreon.com/pucksoup.
Gotta get on it.
Six things a month for $5. And we thank everybody for subscribing because I think it's been pretty good so far. And we really hope that you've liked the bonus content there, and we'll continue to give you more of it in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a live show in Philadelphia.
January 11th?
January 11th, I think, is the date at Helium Comedy Club. Tickets are available. You can check the Puck Soup podcast Twitter feed for those. Frank Saravelli is going to be one guest. We'll probably try to angle to get another guest as well. But it's going to be fun.
I want Ronick so bad.
Yeah, I know you want Ronick so bad. I don't think it's going
to
happen.
I want to do a bit where I pretend to be Dr. Phil and like mediate peace between you, where I'm just like, Greg Wyshynski, I want you to tell me why you don't like JR. And then just, like, sit back and let you two fight each other for 40 minutes.
Greg, if you want to cry, you can go ahead and cry. JR has made it safe for people to cry.
Now, I know both of you have yet never won a Stanley Cup. But why can't you win each other's love?
Now, JR, I think this is a salvageable relationship as long as you put in a little more effort into it than you did the forward to Greg's book.
Or your time away from Philly, like when you were with the Phoenix Coyotes.
Or your time as an analyst on NBC, or your hosting of a podcast with Billy Jaffe.
See, this would have been a good bit, but he's never going to come.
No. All right. Well, I'm Greg Wyshynski, ESPN.
I'm not doing the sign-off again. They know who we are.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
See ya. I'm Dave Loza.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FM commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Box soup.